Sangye chu kang zo gi jo nam la Jang ju bar du da ni ga zu ti Da gi jin zo gi bi zo nam gi Dro la bin ji zang gi du par shu I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clean. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha room, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapariwara Ratna Mandala Pudzamega Samudra Saparana Samaye. Okay, welcome to Sakya Pandita's Clarifying the Sage's Intent, Chapter 9, The Perfection of Wisdom. Because this chapter is very deep and the wisdom perfection is the most important perfection, I decided to go through it a couple of different times, a couple of different levels, we say. And the last couple of times we've gone through Ape Rinpoche's commentary, which is a little bit easier to read and understand. And having done that, now I wanted to go through some of the actual text by Sakya Pandita. We won't read every single word because it's quite extensive, and also some of the philosophical arguments are a little bit complicated. And so what I've done is I've gone through and I've picked out some passages of Sakya Pandita's that I thought would add some more to what Ape Rinpoche said previously. So that's what we're going to start tonight, is the actual text that Sakya Pandita wrote. As usual, these perfection chapters begin with the definition of the topic and then ascertaining the nature of it and then going through how to actually practice it. What are the benefits and so on. In Ape Rinpoche's commentary, he defined wisdom as the correct realization of the real nature of phenomena. Sakya Pandita's definition is, he calls it discerning wisdom, by the way, and he says it's the exact knowledge of the real nature of what is to be known. And then he adds, if that knowledge is endowed with correct preparation, actual practice, and conclusion, it becomes the perfection of wisdom. As far as ascertaining the nature of discerning wisdom, Sakya Pandita says there's three parts to that. There's identifying the antithesis, and then discerning the individual antidotes, and then thirdly, correctly accomplishing those antidotes. Regarding identifying the antithesis of discerning wisdom, Sakya Pandita says there's two things to understand there. One is identifying what is imperfect understanding, and then reflecting on the harmful consequences. The first one is identifying the imperfect understanding regarding the antithesis of discerning wisdom. Sakyapandita says there's three kinds of imperfect understanding, and we need to recognize them. The first one is the lack of understanding of someone who, and I'm quoting here, like a simple person, has not pursued the virtue of discerning wisdom. So that would be somebody who just simply has not explored this topic, which is most people, I think. The second type of imperfect understanding is the understanding of non-Buddhists. These are people that seek knowledge, but according to Sakyapandita, they exert themselves in incorrect way. And then the third is the imperfect understanding of people of the foundation path who, they are not erroneous in their basic understanding, but the result will not be perfect Buddhahood. Meaning that the outcome of the path of the foundation path is liberation, but it's not complete Buddhahood. So those are what Sakyapandita identifies as the types of imperfect understanding. And then the second part of identifying the antithesis is examining the harmful consequences of that. Sakyapandita says, and I quote, "Reflecting on the harmful consequences of imperfect understanding has two parts, harmful consequences in this life and harmful consequences in the future lives. As to the harm caused in this life, Sakyapandita says, there are many disadvantages which accrue in the present life from imperfect understanding. Because you are unwise, you do not feel confident. You do not know what you should do and what not. The whole world, including the gods, will scorn you, and you will not be able to join an assembly of scholars, just as a fox cannot go into the midst of lions." And in the words of the Vinaya, someone who is like a lion will not respectfully serve someone who is like a fox. And also, without the wealth of learning, the earth will be blind. Think thus and act accordingly. And also Vasubandhu said in the Treasury of Higher Knowledge, "There is no way to pacify the afflictions without discriminating the factors of existence. And with afflictions, beings wander in the ocean of existence. And therefore, the teacher taught Abhidharma, so they say." Again, that was Vasubandhu. Going back to Sakyapandita's text, he says, "Thus, many disadvantages occur if you lack discerning wisdom, such as your work will have little impact, whatever you do, because you cannot differentiate what should be accepted and what rejected. And wherever you are born, you will be endowed with dull faculties. And by virtue of that, even if you practice some religious teaching, you will only obtain erroneous teachings to practice. And even though you meditate, you will not be able to sever the root of self-postulation. And even if you do, you will fall into the cessation of the Shravaka Arhats or the Pratyeka Buddhas, for you will not be skilled in means." Now Sakyapandita goes into the next section, which is called discerning the individual antidotes. And here there are two parts, the antidote to the cause and the antidote to the result. The antidote to the cause of imperfect understanding is, well, the cause of imperfect understanding is ignorance, and the contributing condition is respecting bad spiritual teachers. And then he quotes from the Thorough Exposition of the Valid Cognition by Dharmakirti, which says, ignorance is the root of all evils. It's the view of self on a transitory collection. Now this term transitory collection, that's a technical term that's used in philosophical discussion. Transitory would refer to impermanent, and collection would refer to whatever are the causes and conditions that come together to make something appear. You can have the self of the person and the self of phenomena. In terms of the self of person, that would be the skandhas or the aggregates. Or in terms of phenomena, whatever has come together to create phenomena. If it's a table, you have to have a tree, somebody has to go and cut down the tree, and then they have to create wood out of the tree trunk, and then somebody has to be the furniture maker to put it all together, and then somebody has to make the stain, and then the stain has to be put on, and somebody has to make the metal parts that connect the legs or whatever. So all the pieces and all the things that have to happen for that table to be appearing as a table, those are collections. Going back to Sakyapandita's text, he says, about the bad religious teacher who is a main contributing factor to imperfect understanding, the same text, that is Dharmakirti's text, explains, and there are also those who repeat erroneous doctrines, and therefore evil people make darkness spread widely. I think even if somebody isn't necessarily evil, if they don't really understand the topic and they're teaching it anyway, the result is the same. It's this imperfect understanding. And then Sakyapandita goes on to say, therefore, exert yourself in learning and reflection, which is the means for avoiding ignorance. As a sutra teaches, through learning you will abandon the useless. Through learning you will turn back from evil. Through learning your discerning wisdom will grow. Through learning you will attain nirvana. Going back to Sakyapandita, he says, accordingly, through learning the habitual propensities of ignorance will diminish. Moreover, you should acquire such learning from a genuine religious teacher whose instructions do not contradict the three divisions of scripture, the Tripitaka, or the four tantric classes. But you should not take as your religious teacher someone who teaches a counterfeit imitation of Dharma that does not accord with those, even though at first glance his conduct appears to be excellent. Sakyapandita continues by saying, the antidote to the resultant imperfect understanding has two parts, refuting mistaken understanding and achieving unmistaken understanding. Now, what follows in the text are literally pages and pages of refuting various wrong views that have occurred historically and from various places. And last time we very briefly named some of those, but I'm not going to read all of this now. because it would take too long, and we've already mentioned it. We will go forward and go back to the quotation of Sakyapandita, who says, "Therefore, for the realization of complete Buddhahood, three factors must come together. Compassion, which is like a bow, discerning wisdom, which is like an arrow, and skillful means, which is like an expert archer. For as Acharya Chandragoman said, oh, though there was such a one as you, blessed one, who by great merit possesses the bow of compassion." The perfectly gathering the qualities of Avalokiteshvara Sutra says, Avalokiteshvara said, "Blessed one, a bodhisattva should not train in many great factors. If a bodhisattva adheres to and realizes one factor, he will have all the qualities of a Buddha in the palm of his hand. And what is that? It is great compassion." And Dharmakirti said in his text, Thorough Exposition of Valid Cognition, "The proof of the Buddha's authority is great compassion." Chandrakirti said in his text, Entering the Middle Way, "Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas arose from the Lord of Sages. The Buddha arose from Bodhisattvas. The causes of Bodhisattvas are compassionate mind, non-dual cognition, and the thought of awakening." The King of Meditation Sutra says, "Though you reveal to many living beings that the aggregates are empty, they will not understand how they are without a self. And those unknowing people, when challenged, will angrily retaliate and will speak harsh words." This is a caution that we've heard before in these teachings, which is that we shouldn't teach emptiness to unripe beings because there's too many possibilities of problems arising. Here it's mentioned that they might get angry, but other people might misinterpret it and fall into either of the extremes that we've talked about before. It's not a topic for people that aren't ready for it, that don't have some kind of background, or have some kind of, you know, ripeness. It's actually a downfall to teach emptiness to an unripe person. So this is another reminder of that. Going further into the text, Sakyapandita has a section called Achieving Unmistaken Understanding. He's talked extensively about identifying and not following mistaken understanding. Now he wants to talk about unmistaken understanding. And this section has three parts. The preparation, which is to use theory to cut off conceptual elaborations about ultimate reality. And then the main practice, which is to use meditation to appropriate the sense of emptiness into your experience. And the conclusion, which is to use practice to bring that understanding to perfect completion. We've talked about this before, that this perfection of wisdom, because it's so vast, there are steps to practicing it. So the first step is the intellectual side of it, eliminating the mistaken understandings and then clarifying the unmistaken understandings. But just studying it and contemplating it is not enough. The realization has to come through meditation. So we have to meditate correctly, and there's lots of downfalls that can happen through incorrect meditation, so that needs to be understood before being attempted. And then you need to integrate it into your life. Going back to the text, the first step being the preparation, which is using theory to cut off conceptual elaborations about ultimate reality. Here, the terminology cut off, there are some synonyms. It could be eliminate. Cut off could mean eliminate. Or it could mean to be free from. Quoting the text, Sakyapandita says, the first step consists of observing moral discipline and training your mind by means of learning, as was explained earlier. Learn the scriptures of the perfections tradition and the reasoning as taught in the Madhyamaka treatises from a teacher who is a learned master, that is, from someone who understands their sense perfectly. Thus, you should recognize the essential points differentiating the erroneous and non-erroneous doctrines. If you're not able to learn that much, then remove your conceptual elaborations by studying a text that suits your own intellectual level, such as Shantideva's Compendium of Trainings or his Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. If you do not understand that much, what you practice could become an erroneous doctrine, like that of the non-Buddhist, because you're practicing something that's not the Buddhist teachings, while thinking that it is, like the blind leading the blind. And with that in mind, the Buddha taught in great detail the disadvantages of not studying and the benefits of learning, such as, quote, through learning, you will abandon the useless, unquote. And Sakyapandita continues saying, moreover, the great benefits of teaching the doctrine are taught in the sutra teaching the non-origination of all things, which says, previously, an incalculable eon ago, this is the long story that we recounted last time about the meditation master who forbade his disciples to teach very strictly, and at the end he suffered great karmic consequences because of he stopped the teaching of the Dharma. So we recounted that story last time, and that's available in the audio if somebody wants to hear that story again. I won't repeat the story. Sakyapandita continues at the end of the story by saying, also, the lion's roar of Queen Shramala Sutra teaches that all solemn resolutions are included within one resolution. And what is that one? It is taught to be, quote, may I uphold the good Dharma, unquote. Other sutras also state that it's more virtuous to teach one four-part verse to a sentient being than to fill the world with the seven kinds of precious substances and offer it to the three jewels. The reason is that the offering of wealth causes the excellent acquisitions of cyclic existence, but the teaching of Dharma causes the qualities of the Arya. Having understood in that way, you should exert yourself in learning and reflection. So here, the word Arya, in this text anyway, it refers to the bodhisattvas, what we would translate that sometimes as exalted bodhisattvas, which are the bodhisattvas who have attained the 10 grounds, or the bhumis, and there'll be an extensive discussion of that later on. I believe it's the 11th chapter. But that's what Arya refers to here. Sakyapandita continues saying, if you do not achieve vast learning in that way, you will not understand the two truths. And not understanding those, you will not understand the sense of the profound scriptures, and your mind will not be liberated. But if you understand and gain a mastery of the two truths, you will understand the sense of the scriptures and be liberated. And for that reason, you must correctly understand the two truths. As Arya Nagarjuna said, the teaching of the Dharma by the Buddhas relies on the two truths, the surface truth of the world and the truth of ultimate reality. Whoever does not understand the distinction between the two truths will not realize the profound reality of the Buddha's doctrine. And that quote comes from Nagarjuna's fundamental verses on the middle way. That is the preliminary step, and now the second step, the main practice, which is subtitled Using Meditation to Experience Emptiness. And this has three parts. The first is the preparatory ritual, in which you sit in a comfortable seat in a remote place, assume a cross-legged position, place one hand atop the other in your lap, straighten your spine, gaze past the tip of your nose, and perform the uncommon going for refuge and generation of the thought of awakening. Uncommon refuge refers to the Mahayana refuge because there are some differences between the Foundation Path Refuge and the Mahayana Refuge. Therefore, the Mahayana Refuge is uncommon. So that's what is referred to there. And then continuing in the text, it says, after that beginning, the main practice is to meditate in the concentration of the emptiness that possesses the highest of all features, the lack of any substantial self of a person, or of phenomena, namely, the perfection of wisdom. That's all Sakyapandita says about the actual main practice. In Ape Rinpoche's text, he says a few more words, which I think is useful to remember. He says, whatever level you're at in your understanding, that's where you meditate. And once you have that object, then you hold it. So I think that's useful to add here. And then going back to Sakyapandita's text, he says, then the conclusion is the dedication of merit, in which you dedicate the root of merit to perfect awakening for the benefit of sentient beings. For one session of daily practice, cultivate non-objectifying compassion for those sentient beings who have not realized the above. And accomplish all your other activities, such as studying or teaching Dharma, while viewing all appearances as like a dream. Learn the essential points of the meditative absorption of the perfection of wisdom from an expert religious master. The sense of this is the same as that expressed in the introductory chapter of The Perfection of Wisdom, where it says that the Blessed One himself then sat cross-legged on the prepared seat on the lion throne. He straightened his body, placed his thought before him, and concentrated his mind in the meditative absorption called the King of Meditative Absorptions, in which all other meditative absorptions are included and comprehended. That comes out of the Perfection of Wisdom in 100,000 verses. And now Sakyapandita goes to the third step, which is the conclusion, which is using practice to bring the understanding to perfect completion, which has two parts: the practice of ordinary people, and the practice of Aryas. The Aryas, again, that refers to the noble bodhisattvas who have attained the bhumis. And that practice that they do will be explained later in chapter 11, which is the chapter about the bhumis. So for now, we're just going to talk about the practice of ordinary people. And Sakyapandita says, if you engage in this practice, according to the stages of the five paths, separate modes of practice are taught for the small, middling, and great path of accumulation, and the four stages of the path of application that are conducive to penetrations. So what does that mean? Again, in the 11th chapter, I believe it is, we're going to talk about the five paths and the divisions of them. For example, the path of application has four stages. The path of accumulation is the first of those five paths. But we won't go into that in detail now. He makes a reference to it, and we will study it in more detail a little bit later. Right now, we're not really sure what that means, but Sakyapandita seems to have anticipated that occurrence, and he says, but to make it easier to understand, three modes exist for ordinary people. Observing correct conduct, training your discerning wisdom, and achieving meditative absorptions. So the first is to train in moral discipline, the middle is to train in discerning wisdom, and the last is to train in meditative absorptions. We've heard this before, that morality is the basis of whatever practice you're doing. Whether it's a beginning practice or a middle practice or an advanced practice, you have to have morality. You can't be running around lying, stealing, and killing and, you know, call yourself a spiritual practitioner. You need to have that basis always. So that's the observing correct conduct. And then the middle one of training and discerning wisdom, that's what we've been talking about here. And then training in meditative absorptions. We've talked about some, but that's the third one. Sakyapandita goes on to say, concerning the sequence for practicing these three, if you have a pure basis of moral discipline, your discerning wisdom will reach perfection. For by possessing discerning wisdom, your meditative absorptions will be free of delaying diversions. As the King of Meditation Sutra teaches, quote, the King of Meditative Absorptions, this meditation on emptiness, rests on the head of pure moral discipline. Childish people who only meditate on the empty nature of the factors of existence and exert themselves improperly do not understand this, unquote. And then Sakyapandita anticipates a question, so he writes question. And the question is, what is that exertion for improper objects? In other words, what does this quotation mean? And the reply is, the intended sense in this sutra is that childish people who exert themselves in learning without observing moral discipline and in meditating without having studied thus put their efforts into an improper thing, like a simpleton who begins building a wall without having prepared a foundation. Such people will not understand this king of meditative absorptions. Likewise, to explain according to the stages of the three moral disciplines, first, through the moral discipline of vows, you cleanse your body, speech, and mind, just as you would wipe a vessel clean. Next, through the moral discipline of gathering virtuous factors, you fill your mind with excellent qualities, just as you would fill a vessel. And then, by the moral discipline of benefiting sentient beings, you benefit all sentient beings, just as you would restore sick people to health with an elixir offered up in that vessel. Sakyapandita is using an example here of a vessel, and this is also helps us to remember it. And if you remember back to the perfection of morality, they talked about the morality of bodhisattvas. It's not just avoiding wrongdoing. It's also doing virtuous activities, creating, accumulating virtue, and benefiting beings, because bodhisattvas practice for the benefit of all sentient beings. So this is just reminding us of those three types of moralities that bodhisattvas have with this example of the vessel. Continuing in Sakyapandita's text, he says, "Regarding the practice of the above kinds, accomplish all your activities through the method of the perfection of wisdom with the purity of the three spheres." The three spheres being the doer of the action, the recipient of the action, and the nature of the action itself, as previously mentioned. And in fact, I think this has been mentioned in every chapter on the perfections, if I remember. We want to have those three spheres, they're called, always with our practice. Sakyapandita continues saying, "The sutras teach that for quickly attaining perfect and complete Buddhahood, the seven-branched worship will bring you to perfect completion. Therefore, recite thrice daily and thrice nightly the seven branches of worship taught in scriptures, such as in the prayer for excellent conduct, or the prayer of Maitreya, or in treatises such as The Precious Garland, or Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, or in Sakyapandita's own text, Liturgy of 10 Verses, in which taking refuge and generating the thought of awakening in its aspiring and engaging aspects has been added. This seven-branched worship is taught to be a special aspect of skillful means." Ape Rinpoche mentioned this in his commentary. These meditations on emptiness, okay, we do those at whatever level we're at, but there is this practice that's mentioned here is offered as another way of attaining wisdom, which is saying these three times in the morning and three times in the evening, the seven-branch practice. There are other texts that have that practice in it, too. For example, the King of Prayers, Samantabhadra's Aspiration Prayer. That's a common practice. By doing that practice three times in the morning and three times in the evening, it's a special practice to generate wisdom. This is another thing to know, because meditation on emptiness might not be that easy necessarily in the beginning, but in any case we can do these alternative practices to develop our wisdom. And I would add that there are also Manjushri practices. For example, the practice here at the center on Sunday is a wisdom practice. We have ways of developing this. Now Sakyapandita goes on to the next section, which is called Correctly Accomplishing Discerning Wisdom, which has two parts. The two parts are achieving the four excellent qualities and eliminating the seven attachments. So this is a format we've seen before in all the previous five perfections, achieving the four excellent qualities and eliminating the seven attachments applied to that individual perfection. Here, Sakyapandita helps us out by actually naming them. He says, achieving the four excellent qualities is explained in the lines of the Ornament of Mahayana Sutras by Maitreya, which is the source text for Sakyapanditas clarifying the sage's intent. If you remember, this is just a commentary on two verses of a longer text by Maitreya. So in the Maitreya text, it says, quote, discerning wisdom, the destruction of the antithesis, unquote. And so Sakyapandita is referring back to that text, and he explains it as, these four qualities to be achieved are the absence of imperfect discerning wisdom, which is the antithesis of discerning wisdom. Secondly, realizing the non-discursive, the absence of a substantial self. Third, fulfilling all the wishes of others, which is to remove the doubts and accomplish the needs of others based on discerning wisdom. And fourth, bringing sentient beings to maturity, which means that through discerning wisdom, you will establish sentient beings in the three vehicles. Eliminating the seven attachments is explained in the lines, and again, Sakyapandita refers to the Maitreya text, Ornament of Mahayana Sutras, which says, quote, the discerning wisdom of the Bodhisattva is unattached, unquote. And then Sakyapandita comments, saying, accordingly, the seven attachments are attachment to, one, imperfect discerning wisdom, two, procrastination, which means, oh well, I'll do it tomorrow. Number three, premature satisfaction, which means, oh, I did enough, that's enough, I don't need to do anymore. Four, the hopes of getting something in return. Five, the future results of a deed. Six, the antithesis, that is, the undestroyed latent propensities for it. And seven, distraction, which is twofold, which was previously explained. And Sakyapandita says, rid yourselves of those seven attachments together with the dispositions towards them. That concludes the section on how to correctly accomplish the discerning wisdom. The next section is talking about the benefits of producing discerning wisdom. This has two parts, temporary benefits and ultimate benefits. Here there are two classes of temporary benefits, those that occur in this life and those that occur in future lives. In this life, you will acquire many excellent qualities by thoroughly training yourself in discerning wisdom, such as a wise intelligence about the various objects of knowledge. You will possess a confident presence of mind that is not overawed by anyone. And having received the pure expression of the religious teachings, your discerning wisdom will be set free, after which your mind becomes at ease. You enter the ranks of those acclaimed as the learned wise. Your fame comes to pervade the whole world of humans and gods, and you become a trusted authority for the whole world. As to benefits occurring in all future lives, wherever you are born in the future, you will have consummate discerning wisdom and sharp moral faculties. You will be able to retain what you have learned. You will be able to discourse with Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. You will cut off your knowledge obscurations. You will correctly teach the Dharma to others, and so forth. The verse summary of the perfection of wisdom teaches, quote, having understood the nature of all phenomena through discerning wisdom, he completely transcends the three realms of existence, unquote. As to the ultimate benefits, when you become a completely and perfectly awakened Buddha, you will comprehend knowable things exactly as they are, and in their full variety and extent. You will acquire the confident presence of mind of the four analytical knowledges, and through your possession of the four fearlessnesses, you will defeat all evil disputants. For as it is taught by Maitreya, homage to you, excellent teacher, because your intelligence is never obstructed with respect to the support and the supported, the things to be explained, and to speech and knowledge, the means of explaining. And then Sakya Pandita says, this concludes the section on explaining each perfection individually. So we've gone through the six perfections in detail, explaining them, and he then makes a kind of subsequent commentary about the perfections, and he goes into talking about why are there six, and what's the Sanskrit etymology and so forth. I'm not going to read that because it gets into a little bit of detail. But basically, the perfections are six because those are the things you need to accomplish in order to be enlightened. And they're in a certain order because they are in ascending importance. So generosity being the first one, it's important, but it's not as important as morality, because anybody can be generous, but you need to also have morality and so forth and so on. You go through the perfections until you arrive at the perfection of wisdom, which is the highest perfection. Sakya Pandita explains that, and you can read that if you want to understand that a little more. But I think the Sanskrit etymology is interesting. Sakya Pandita quotes Maitreya's Ornament of Mahayana Sutra, which explains the etymology. The Sanskrit etymology for generosity is the word which is poverty, and its etymology means removing poverty. Presumably that means all kinds of poverty. As far as the Sanskrit for moral discipline, the words are cool and acquired, and so the meaning would be acquiring the cool of nirvana. As far as patience, the perfection of patience, the Sanskrit words are agitation and pacification, so the meaning is pacifying the agitated mind. Diligence, the Sanskrit, is the highest, and application, so thus diligence is the application to the highest merit. And the Sanskrit for meditative concentration is holding and mind. Thus, it is meditative concentration because of holding the mind. And the Sanskrit for discerning wisdom is ultimate reality and knowledge. So thus, it means the knowledge of ultimate reality. So those are the actual sources of the words themselves. And that concludes Sakya Pandita's text on the ninth chapter of the Perfection of Wisdom. So do we have any questions or comments about that light reading?
Well spoken.
Well spoken. So there's food for thought and food for meditation there until enlightenment. Anything else?
It certainly puts an emphasis on the responsibility of the practice to the community.
And having a good teacher. We talked last time quite a bit about the possible downfalls if you don't have a good teacher and you don't understand it. Even if you're a really, really good meditator, you can end up in the form and the formless realms, and that is a major detour for a bodhisattva who's on the path to enlightenment. That's something sobering.
Yep. Yeah, there's lots of ways to make mistakes.
Yeah, even experts.
Yeah. It's good to have a guide.
It's essential in this case.
Yeah.
But studying is the first step, so we've studied quite a bit here in these last couple of lessons on the ninth chapter. I think it's interesting, too, that Shantideva's discussion of wisdom is also the ninth chapter in his text. So we'll continue our adventure next time, but for now, we can close with our dedication.
What's the next chapter?
I'll probably do another week with a few more comments from His Holiness the 42nd Sakya Treason, because his commentary goes into some things that we haven't talked about. So there'll be, not a lot, but there'll be some touching on that just to round out the ninth chapter. And then the tenth chapter is a very, very, I think, a very interesting chapter, which is entitled The Four Means of Attraction. And this is one of my favorite sections of teaching because it's not taught all that often, but it's very important to teaching, especially in this context of going through mapping out the path to enlightenment, which is basically what clarifying the sage's intent is. That would be chapter 10 when we get to it.
Again, it's responsibility to the community.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. And it's just really an interesting chapter to study, I think. It's very practical. Okay, let's say our dedication here. So nam de tam cha ze pa ni tom na nye pe da nam pam je te ke ga na chi ba lung tu pe yi sit pe tso le do wa du ar sho jang tu sim cho grim po che ma ke pa nam ke gyur chi ke ma nyam par me par yong gong ne gong tu pel par sho jam pa pa wo ji dar ken pa dong kun du sang po le yong de jin de da kung yi je su da lo che ge wa di da tam che ra du no tu sung che pi ga wa tam che ki no wa gang la cho tu na pa gi da jeng ge we tsa wa di kun kyong song bo cho chi ra du no war gi chak sa wa dong cho ching tsa pa di je su yi rong ku shing so wa yi. Gewa chung se da gi chi sakpa Tang je zo pe jung chu ji no. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious, may it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all of my own virtues, that I might train to be like them. Through this dedication, praised as supreme by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching, be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. Tuchena.